This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Khan, with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han, and another week begins.
Good morning.
It's 28th of May, and a couple of days left on the month. I think the month lasts all the way up to Thursday this time around.
With that's a right. Public holiday tomorrow.
That's right, public holiday tomorrow. And then we are just a few days away from our tax holiday, GST, to be zero rated starting this Friday. So going to be quite an eventful week, I think.
Yeah, for some of us, I'm speaking primarily of myself, I didn't think about that too much and went out and bought some new pairs of pants just the other day.
Wow.
To my utter regret.
But a number of retailers have actually started giving a 6% discount already just to, while the iron is hot.
That's right. And so I bought a vacuum cleaner because I needed it. And they already started absorbing the GST just this past week. So, hey.
Oh, that's very... Is that just generosity or are they sort of... trying to encourage consumers to spend even before the tax officially begins.
Yeah, correct. Because otherwise you'll have this lull in retail activity until starting June 1st, right? So in the interim, if you know it's going to happen, I think it's a pretty smart move on the part of retailers.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay. Either of you football fans?
I am.
No.
Okay, because Real Madrid beat Liverpool 3-1.
That's right. So the UEFA Champions League, you've got Real Madrid winning it for three straight seasons. That is almost unimaginable, but they did it thanks to Liverpool goalkeeper Loris Karius. So 3-1. Did either of you watch it? I dare say no, because it was at 2:45 a.m. on Sunday. I didn't watch it either because I was
You mean
out.
This morning?
On Sunday morning.
All right.
Yeah. So it was big news over the weekend. There ends club football, at least for this season. We got to wait until the middle of June for the World Cup to begin. Then we can start getting our football fix again.
I must say, I do enjoy football, but in small doses. Every time the World Cup comes around, I find... I kind of join in the global hysteria. So that's true. Joyce,
For World Cup, I do. Also partly because of the players, depending on who's playing. But but aside from that, not really.
Oh, so
a big
you know
fan.
The players?
Some of them. I mean, depending on, they start,
so
every
you
year,
kind of
different
flipping
players.
Through those booklets, looking at the teams and saying, oh, that one's cute, that one's cute. I'm going to support that team.
But also because when World Cup comes around, everyone's talking about it, and then you go to the mama, the whole atmosphere, it's really fun.
June 14th, people. June 14th.
Actually, what's also been fun, kind of Malaysian politics of late, is the people on the run. Jamal Yunus apparently resurfaced over the weekend and said that he hadn't run away, that he had gone for a rest.
Yeah, and apparently, according to his lawyers, it was part of a miscommunication. So he's kind of back, I guess, in custody, maybe perhaps, or at least in negotiations. Not quite sure what the status is, but he's back on the radar.
Yeah, he said he thought he could leave because his remand order was over and that his bail had been granted. But he didn't realize that he had to sign some documents before the bail could be finalized.
The question, of course, is why nobody could find him. He was such a visible face, voice, and because his political antics, if you like to call it that, smashing beer bottles in front of the state secretariat or turning up in his towel to make some point about water shortages.
Yep.
Usually people like that are very visible and kind of known to everybody.
I guess the question is, is there space in the political discourse here in Malaysia for such antics? So, because on one hand, some would find it tremendously fascinating and entertaining. But then on the other end of the spectrum, it's like, he's just a downright nuisance. So, is there space in the new Malaysia for such antics?
I think he's going to create that space. And, to be fair to him, it happened on... And happens on both sides of the political divide. If you just think there's one political divide in this country, I think it's more. But if you remember, there were activists who presented the former Prime Minister, Abdullah Ahmad Badawi, with a pillow. They presented him with a pillow because they accused him of sleeping on the job. Mm-hmm. Also known those from the now government, federal government, some of the party members presented, I think sitting ministers with a mirror saying, look at yourself, all that kind of things. And it's just kind of a bit of theatrics.
Yeah. Well, but I think now it's all now moved online with all the memes that have come out over the last 2-3 weeks. Hilarious. You know, plenty of entertainment there. If you're not into the World Cup, you can just follow those political memes.
Okay, we'll be back with a look at the country's debt. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Bob Marley and the Wailers with Jamming. Aishwarya Kutin with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run continues. It's the 28th of May. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning with a range of interviews and news and analysis. Remember, after the 8 o'clock bulletin on the Breakfast Grill today, none other than Lim Kit Siang, leader, long-time leader of the DAP. So we're going to have him there. So if you have any questions, remember you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Let's take a look at very interesting moves by politicians. Some, of course, we just talked about Jamal Yunus fleeing the country. Musa Aman also has fled the country, apparently, according to an article in The Star. He's most likely in London. He was not supposed to leave the country, considering that he was being investigated by several agencies. But he did make the slip. He slipped out somehow. I don't know how, in that country with so many tight borders.
Yeah, well, apparently it was via a rendezvous in Singapore and then off to London. Either Singapore or another country, I can't remember now. But yeah.
How did he get out of Sabah, the Malaysian borders?
Yeah. Interesting. Well, his legal counsel has said that, Tan Sri Musa Aman says that the MACC is welcome to search his residence. That was made in a statement. I guess we're still waiting to see whether or not he'll come back. But a close aide said that he might show up soon to answer questions. Still waiting.
Okay, yeah. Talking about making a statement, the Telok Intan Member of Parliament, Nga Ko Ming, has donated his first month's salary to the Finance Ministry to help with the national debt. Now, the question is this similar to the pay cut that Cabinet took? All in all, will this make anything of a dent in the national debt-ish levels? And so what's going on here?
Well, actually, Sharad, there's also a Malaysian who started a crowdfunding activity to help reduce the country's debt. So you can see a number of Malaysians out there really concerned about the 1 trillion ringgit debt that we have. And they're all saying, come, let's try and help the country.
Well, also comedian Jason Leong said on Twitter that, he was going to be taking donations and he hoped that the donations would come to him and that he would invest it wisely and help the nation. So I think that was meant as a joke. The cabinet's decision of a political gesture, perhaps with no bearing on the level of the national debt, but... So why bother with these gestures?
Right. I mean, I guess, everyone's trying to participate and actively lend a hand in trying to reduce the national debt. But like you guys pointed out, what's, 1 month's salary in relation to 1 trillion ringgit. And I think for that crowdfunding campaign here in Malaysia, the goal is just to raise slightly less than 400,000 ringgit. So you guys do the math, that's what, like 0.04% or not even that, I think it's probably less than that. Right now, so I guess to each their own, if they want to do that, that's fine. I don't know how those debt payments can be made via crowdfunding. Because the Ministry of Finance...
Is the gesture important, though? If you remember, for those of us who remember Dr. Mahathir when he first took over, and I do remember it, though I don't remember this particular instance, a move that he made was that he did, in fact, begin his government with a pay cut. Mm. It was immortalized in a lot...
That
went around. So, again, the gesture of saying, well, let's think about government not as some endless fount of donations for us or gifts from government, but actually something that we need to govern wisely.
Yeah, I think it's a good gesture. I think that's good. And it comes from, if it's sincere and also with these citizens out there who are wanting to help the country, I guess what they can do, this is how much they have and this is how much they can give. But also, and there are other ways to help the country, like pay your, we're talking about TPN loan, you know, pay your taxes on time and declare your taxes according to how much you earn. Yeah, those are important as well.
Right, exactly. You know, because the PTPTN, for example, is one of the bigger contingent liabilities on the books there, right? So, you know, now I would assume that those who are actually actively participating in this crowdfunding campaign would have the kind of disposable income to begin with, and I assume, right? But yeah, you're right. You have to consider the opportunity cost as opposed to putting money towards this crowdfunding campaign. There are other, perhaps more, better or... the funds could be used for greater good here in society, right?
Yeah, like so, going and buying a vacuum cleaner.
That's right.
Just keep the economy charging. Keep spending.
And even though the retailer gives you a 6% discount, it's like, nope, I'm going to pay that 6%. Why? Because I want to help pay the national debt.
Well, you know, I do think there's a tremendous enthusiasm for the new government. And I think perhaps, you know, it's showing itself up in this. Yes, it's been a shock to learn that perhaps the state of our finances is much worse than we understood. And for the scandals coming out of 1MDB and others, other state institutions, also, I think, lending a bit of that oomph behind the support for the new government. I mean, how many of us really... were surprised by what has been revealed in the last 2 weeks.
Right, sure. But I think also at the same time, we need to have a better grasp of what national debt actually does. Like, again, I would like to quote Yanis Varoufakis, you know, who's the former Greek finance minister. You do not use the personal finance view and look at personal debt the same way you look at the country's debt. In fact, I'll encourage you to just Google medium.com, and they've got this great article titled, "What If Every Government Paid Off Its National Debt."
That was being promoted by our friend in the EPF, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah, and several other people retweeted as well. The TLDR, that's Millennial for Too Long Didn't Read, the summary of that article is that if a government paid off all its debt, the economy would tank. Right, so it's keep understanding what sovereign debt does and how it's issued and how it's paid and what it does for the broader economy.
I think it's key is just to make sure that we can service the debt.
And
also to find out why we had such debt levels and what we spend it on. Was it good debt that we took on for development purposes and did it go to the right places and so on and so forth, or was it about basically somebody plundering the state? We'll come back with no answers to that question, but with more queries into life in general. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Foxygen with San Francisco. I'm Shahad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. It's not clear to me why we played a song about San Francisco, because...
Why?
We're so far away from San Francisco.
Well, but we love our songs about New York. We love our songs.
Do we?
Yeah, why not?
Who's the we?
Hans talking about
me, myself, and I. I mean, you know, Frank Sinatra, you know, all those songs about New York, even to the latest renditions by Jay-Z and one. So, yeah.
I think we need Budapest. To talk up our own cities. There's actually, I mean, think of the number of songs, Malaysian songs, that are about cities. I can think of Jesselton, which is a Pete Teo song, Jesselton Tonight. Do you know that song?
Yeah, I think I've heard it before. Yeah, I think about his record,
Jesselton, of course, is the old name for Kota Kinabalu.
Right.
Right? Yeah. You know that, don't you?
Sure.
No,
I'm Googling it right now,
So, during the colonial period, Jesselton was the name of Kota Kinabalu. It was renamed after independence, or just before. I can't quite remember exactly when Jesselton became Kota Kinabalu. If you do know, no prizes for you, but you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. A lot of people have been asking me about those t-shirts that BFM have put out, you know, Birkins for Madame or
Bata for Mahathir.
And they're retailing. We're selling them. So everybody's asking me if I can get them a free copy. A free t-shirt.
Yeah. Well, GST not included starting June 1st, I guess.
Yeah, but still, you still have to pay some money.
Right.
It's a tax holiday, not a giveaway come June 1st. Now, talking about Bata for Mate, apparently some people not only want... Bata for Mahathir, they want a Nobel Prize for Mahathir.
Yeah, that's right. So they started an online petition, started recently to consider Tun M as a nominee for the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize this year. And the petition is aiming to receive target of what, 15,000? And they're just shy of that.
75,000.
Oh, 75,000. Yeah, I thought 75. The target was 15,000. Yeah, okay,
so the target is 75,000. Look, you know, full credit to the man, right, for bringing together what some see as a ragtag coalition of parties and actually overthrowing BN's, what some might call, regime.
Who sees it as a ragtag coalition of parties? They ran two states, the richest states in the Federation, for a decade.
I'm just quoting a Bloomberg article. Thank you very much. But anyways, like, look, so with this nomination of Tun Dr. Mahathir being awarded a Nobel Peace Prize, is this Tunphoria in overdrive? Because, I mean, full credit to him.
I think you're in overdrive. You want to push that Tunphoria.
I do. That's I put that on a t-shirt and start selling it.
Well,
without
I do
GST.
Think you're right, though, about the Tunphoria. But the question is, perhaps it would be quite bewildering for some people to try and understand. We often associate the Peace Prize with going to those who work in conflict situations and those extreme conflicts, right? So you think of Jimmy Carter, and I can't remember the Israeli prime minister who got, or Shimon Peres, who got it at the same time. A whole range of people associated with violent conflict. But here it's different, right? The premise is different.
Yeah, because, you know, he won G14, which is huge, right, for Malaysia and, you know, for those who perhaps follow global political developments. But does it really warrant a Nobel Peace Prize, though?
Well, his daughter, Marina Mahathir, has come out to say that, you know, it's really nice for Malaysians to think highly of her dad. But she's saying that knowing her father, he's not one who works hard for an award or recognition. So, you know, she's basically saying thanks but no thanks.
Okay, so what? So just to get some clarity, it's they have suggested it's the award would go to him because he helmed a peaceful transfer of power, and they say that he's analogous to Nelson Mandela because P.W. Botha was also, I think, jointly awarded that Nobel Prize for helming a peaceful transition. I think that is the issue. Peaceful transition of power. This is because no ordinary election. This was one of the longest political parties in power, right? So the over six decades in power, you'll see a fusion of party and state. And the expectation, as it's been in many parts of the world, is that people in power for so long do not hand over power so easily.
Right, you know, but some have actually said that the stunning results of GE14 could have reverberations across the region as well. You know, perhaps Singapore could
never.
You don't think so? I mean, but there's chatter about it, right? You know, they could perhaps take a note out of the Malaysian book.
Well, you know, I think the one thing to consider, and we really don't have time to go into the in-depth into Singapore politics, but there was always a bit of space for democratic dissent in this country. The fact that you had, you know, states that were governed by the federal opposition for so long suggests that Mahathir helped build this moment on the backs of the work of many others, including Lim Kit Siang, who's coming on the Breakfast Grill after the 8 o'clock bulletin.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. To take us to the first bulletin of the morning, Blur with There's No Other Way. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Sly and the Family Stone with If This Room Could Talk. I'm sure I couldn't with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. Remember, you can always join this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. It's coming up to 40 minutes past 6 in the morning. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock with a range of interviews, news and analysis. We'll start with what is being called Colgate. Colgate, not the toothpaste. It's, of course, the harassment of MP for Pematang Power, Nurul Izzah Anwar. It's really come as a shock for many that attitudes towards women have not changed since May 9th.
Yes, exactly. And there's definitely a need to introduce, you know, title laws to uplift women's status. If you look at what happened to Nurul Izzah, it was really disgusting. Did you guys watch the video?
No, I didn't watch the video. Okay. But I read the news articles that came out. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, it was a caller that called in to this radio show or something that's online. And I'm not going to repeat what he said, but basically, they were caught by surprise. And you can see that they handled it quite well. But my question is, how come they didn't drop the call? Do you think it happened too fast that it was not?
Well, it's different radio stations, I guess, will have different protocols. Mm-hmm. But the issue also would be, you know, why should radio stations engage in that kind of censorship? Should the politicians, including the radio hosts, learn to deal with such attitudes? Because they're out there in the world. We do ourselves no favors by pretending they don't. So instead of, sort of turning the dial down on those who have chauvinistic views, which is essentially what it is. It's a misogynistic, anti-women type of attitude that tries to shame women, especially women who have succeeded. Why not call it out for what it is and then have a conversation about that?
Well, to be fair, so Nurul Izzah did. She had an op-ed piece published in, at least on malaymail.com, and you can always find it out there. You can Google it there. You've got this misogynic, sexist attitude that is there, perhaps fostered by patriarchal undertones, but often they come filtered, through this religious lens, right? So they use that as the excuse to, in this particular instance, put down Nurul Izzah because of her wardrobe. Now, some still abide by that dress code, but in today's world, in this so-called new Malaysia, looks like the concept hasn't exactly permeated every single segment of Malaysian society.
I feel it's also kind of like harassment. The call was, in a way, a harassment. And you can see that I agree with Nurul Izzah. She's saying that, implementation of strict yet relevant laws, for example, Sexual Harassment Act and Privacy Intrusion Act, will play a significant role in preventing misdeeds against women. This was in her op-ed. And yeah, I agree with that.
One of the things that people who maybe they've not met her personally but would remember some images of her in the media would probably note that she dresses quite conservatively. Yeah. And so the question is, why is it that she is being targeted for this, right? It does seem that this person, and there are a lot of haters out there. I think we have to remember that, after May 9th, a lot of people lost out. They were on top, now on the bottom, and they're going to be attacking the Pakatan Harapan government and its representatives just because they resent what's happened to their position and privileges.
Right. And also in her op-ed, Nurul Izzah points this out. Now, if she, an MP, is not spared from this kind of abuse, as you describe it, Joyce, right, then what more other regular women here in Malaysia? Mm. Can you imagine the kind of prejudice and outright sexism that they are subjected to on a daily basis? And they don't even have the, stature it or status in society to really back them up. Here you've got this caller by the name of Azrul, who very brazenly called into this online radio show and basically made those statements to her face, pretty much, right? So if they can do that to her, what more other women here in Malaysia?
Tell us what you think. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tell us what you think is actually happening. Is this caller really concerned about women dressing in what he considers an appropriate manner, or whether it's religious or otherwise? Or was this really a political act trying to harass a member of the newly formed Pakatan Harapan government?
And why always pick on what women wear? I that's what I don't get. You can wear conservatively as well, but sometimes there are men out there who just, I don't know where their mind is, and they'll come up with all sorts of things and all sorts of unnecessary comments.
Right. Now, to be fair,
well, for the record, I'm not trying to justify Azrul in any way. But I recall this instance when I was doing live TV, and the guest that we had on actually had a tudung somewhat misplaced and was showing a bit of a chest. Now, what we did was we cut away to B-roll and had a female producer then adjust, right? In other words, the point I'm trying to make is that if those were Azrul's genuine concerns, there are other ways to convey that as opposed to just shaming her via a live call. I think, you know, there's...
It does beg the question, though, you know, why should a representative of the government be criticized for their dress as opposed to the content of what they're trying to deliver in terms of policy and so on and so forth?
Why always pick on the dressing of women?
Well, because it's an easy target, right? This is what some conservatives do. They focus on the superficial because they're trying to push an agenda where they are in a position of strength and they can determine how everybody else acts in the world. Well, that left everybody stunned and silent. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation. You don't have to remain silent. At BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 0187898899. We'll be back with a look at advice that's been given to the Pakatan Riot government. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Doors with the 20th Century Fox. I'm Shoaid Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han, who are both 21st Century Foxes. Foxes, that's plural. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Look now at some criticism that's coming the way of Pakatan Harapan. This not from its detractors, not from individuals from the Barisan Nasional or apologists for Barisan Nasional, but in fact from their own ranks. This latest comes from Kadir Jassin, of course, well known for his leadership of the New Straits Times over many decades. He says those members of the government should work more and talk less.
Yeah, so that's the title of his blog post. So he's saying that there's no need for Pakatan to sensationalize matters or scream at the top of their lungs anymore since it's now the government. But yeah, basically, I guess he's talking about, you know, because the amount of things that have been uncovered and shared with the public is quite a lot that's coming out. But yeah, hey, you know, a number of us want to know. So it depends on where you are.
Right. I think that he's referring to the tone that's coming out of the new the new federal government. And I believe in that blog post, it's... well, one of the ministers named is the Ministry of Finance. Now, this appears to be a growing call here because it's not just Kadir Jassin. You also had DAP's Tan Seng Yao making similar remarks over the weekend. And if you go back to the later part of last week, we spoke about Andy Mukherjee's posting.
Well, I don't know if that's a growing call, but that's, you know, Tan Seng Yao, of course, had strained relationships with their own party.
Sure.
I must say that the idea that there's work and then there's talk, especially when it comes to government, this binary, I think, doesn't work for me because so much of government's work is the business of communicating. And I think especially in the early days of this government, the idea that, because this is not the government of the past, right? They're taking over from from a ruling coalition that held this country for close to or slightly over a half a century. So communicating is essential to the job, to the work that's being done.
Yeah, and if you're talking about a growing call, there were also people who supported Guan Ying. I mean, Leslie Lau, the managing editor of Malay Mail Online, he wrote a piece published 2 days ago. You know, he's saying a less blunt tool for Lim Guan Ying. Really, Mr. Mukherjee? And you can read. Right. That's a pretty good op-ed that he wrote. And I agree. I mean, it depends on what you want, whether do you want more information or not. I think there are two sides of... there are two sides to this story.
Look, I don't think it's not about less information, right? It's about the tone of the communication. I guess, for lack of better terms, having a more more statesmanship, right? It's how you communicate the tone. Also knowing that when you are in the position of power, guess what? You know, investors, markets, citizens, you know, taxpayers, they're all looking to you because guess what? You set the tone and you set the policies now. So it's one thing to have an opposition-like tone, which is pretty fascinating to see Dato' Sri Najib kind of adopt that
on role. Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook, right? Go figure. So now, I think what Kadir Jassin, what Tan Seng Yao, what Andy Mukherjee and the like are saying, it's like...
So far only three, right?
Well,
yeah, and also I think it must be. I agree with Han that tone is very important. That everybody is, you know, profoundly aware of the consequences of making statements. The question of whether Lim Guan Eng's tone was wrong, especially in detailing what had already been announced by Tun Dr. Mahathir. Mahathir had already mentioned the 1 trillion number. I think what Guan Eng was doing was clarifying the details of that. So it would have been the first time that the Malaysian public had heard this number. Mm. And also, I think Andy Mukherjee's critique seemed to focus essentially on foreign investors. And I guess at this point in time, you know, the main stakeholders are not foreign investors in what's happening in Malaysia.
Yeah, and tone aside, I mean, you can have a fancy tone or not. At the end of the day, we want the real story. And as Leslie Lau says, you know, by the way, Mr. Mukherjee, the money that has been lost, that's my money, not just mine alone, but it belongs to all of us Malaysians.
So it depends on...
For me, I feel also it's just... You're saying, yeah, tone aside, I think it's good to know the information, as in now, know where we stand, where did the money go? I think we don't even know about that. But the information that's coming out, you know, it's like peeling an onion, as we always talked about it, you know.
That's the prevailing analogy when it comes to 1MDB, mm-hmm. isn't it? That it's peeling an onion. Because tears flow when you peel. Well, actually, when you cut onions, not when you peel them.
Well, you know, when you get to the heart of it, I guess. Yeah, right. Well, you know, look, if you're keeping score, all right, so you've got three on one side, and then you got Leslie Lau, who else is on the other side? 3-1.
Well, okay. And then, of course, there are any number of individuals, you know, who feel that way. But the important thing is, let's continue this conversation. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8811. Tell us what you think about the communication strategy of the current government, and we'll continue this conversation about it. We are coming up to 57 minutes past 6 in the morning. Taking us to the next bulletin is Alabama Shakes with Hang Loose. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run continues. It's just 6.5 minutes past 7 in the morning. It's the 28th of May, and we're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock with a range of interviews and news and analysis. Also remember, today on The Breakfast Grill at about 8 o'clock, we have Lim Kit Siang, because longtime leader of the Democratic Action Party and now MP for Iskandar Puteri, one of the longest serving MPs we've had in Parliament. And Han, you're going to be speaking to him.
That's right. So I want to get his personal take on GE14, okay? Because, I mean, keep in mind, this is a man who has fought the good fight for decades now. His involvement into Malaysian politics goes all the way back to the 1960s. So this has got to be a momentous, and that's an understatement there, you know, a momentous occasion for him, you know, what happened, what transpired on May 9th. So I want to get his take on what happened for GE14 and also his outlook on the Pakatan Coalition now helming the federal government. What's next for him, not just personally, but also for Pakatan as well.
Okay, we have several WhatsApp messages come in. Gan Tian Eng says, Lim Guan Eng must remember that he's now the government, not the opposition, so he must be careful about his public statements, not so as to not affect investor sentiment. We also have Jane Lee, who says that she's actually written to Andy Mukherjee telling him that she disagrees with his views and says that we need all the information we can get. So that conversation, I guess, will continue for the foreseeable future. Now, the media, of course, plays a very important role in the life of the nation, and coming back, not like a bad penny, but in fact, something that's quite welcome. It went away during the general elections. The Malaysian Insight, it resumes operations today. I tried to refresh my page. I didn't see anything new on it yet, so I wait for the opening story this morning. But at any rate, we caught up with its editor, Jabba Sadiq, who we've had on BFM many, many times, and asked him what his team up to in the interim.
So we basically took a two-month break of sorts, where we had an app called Malaysia Decides, although nobody knew we were running it for some purpose after all. You know, we didn't want to get black-holed. You know, we use the term black-hole, but basically you're blocked from Malaysian access. So what are we good at? We're good at analysis. We're good at commentaries. We are good at the inside dope. We are hopefully good with breaking news again. And this time, you know, we have a bit of a video action going on. And we'll just do the same things we did, but better. I mean, everybody's doing what we used to do. So we just have to up our game and do what we are good at better. And one of the things we are good at is explaining what's happening to the people, their backstory, why is this happening, what potentially happened tomorrow or the day after going down the road, right? So this is very important for Malaysians to understand this new Malaysia, because this is uncharted territory for anyone in living in Malaysia today. We've never had a change of government as drastic as this. We've never had the bit of carnage that's going on in the stock markets. Now, is that because there's distrust in the new government, or is that part of the regional sell-off, or for many reasons? So we need to explain what's going on to people so they know. Only an informed society can make an informed decision.
Now, the Malaysian Insight is returning to quite a different media landscape from before G14. So we asked Jahaba for his thoughts on how the government and the media should adapt to this new Malaysia.
I think they don't need to do anything at all. The fact is, as some of the guys in the Pakatan Harapan government have said, these media that was owned by companies linked to the former government proved to be ineffective in promoting Barisan Nasional propaganda and achievements. The fact that you saw an overwhelming number of seats falling to Pakatan and to some extent PAS showed that these media were completely blindsided or were just drinking their own Kool-Aid, to quote a former minister.
We also asked his thoughts on state-linked media like Bernama and RTM.
Okay, so state-linked media is interesting because the state is now run by a different government, right? So the state media has to follow the government of the day. So the RTMs and Bernamas have to do their job of informing people what the government of the day does. They don't have to be slavish and sycophantic. They just have to report fairly and evenly on the entire political spectrum. Just do their job as journalists, really, at the end of the day.
Of course, with the new media landscape, there are challenges for all media players. Competition for the likes of BFM as well, and the Malaysian Insight, because of the general freedoms that now be allowed. We asked Jahaba what he thinks about this increased competition.
I think any kind of competition is good for anyone. You know, if you mollycoddle the media and you nurture them in an isolated way, you're going to be another Proton company, right? You just have to be on life support all the time, or you're going to be like Utusan. You know, you need government contracts to just continue to survive. The best indicator of any media's strength and viability is advertising and readership, right? So if you're good at what you do, you'll always get readership, you'll get subscribers, you'll get advertising. If you are really terrible at what you do, you just get out of the business because you're just not good at it.
That was Jahaba Sadiq, editor of the Malaysian Insight. Due to be relaunched this morning, I'm going to try and refresh my page and see if the last story, the big story on Malaysian Insight, was midweek polling date for GE14. They speculated and they were absolutely spot on in that speculative piece.
Yeah, but the timing of them going offline was just right before GE, and then them coming back just right after GE. It's just, yeah, the timing of that.
Have a look at the front page of the Malaysian Insight this morning. Their top story, UMNO's death march began in 1999. That's the first story, along with understanding Johor's political terrain, key to the G14 win. This is an interview with DAP's Liu Chin Tong. And get used to hearing unpleasant truths, said Nick Nazmi. This is a message to Malaysians. Nick Nazmi, because being the Pakatan Youth Chief.
Right, so you have managed to refresh your Malaysian
so
Insight.
It's back on now.
It's back
yeah.
on now, yeah, absolutely. So, okay, have a look at that. And tell us what you think you would like from the media, not just in broad terms, but maybe specific terms. Tell us at BFM what you think we should be doing in this period. You can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Right, and because you've, over the last couple of weeks, right, you have seen many other media outlets either change their editorial stance or they've actually ventured into politics. Now, one of the MPs that we had on the Breakfast Grill, Fahmi, right, next thing I knew, I think on Thursday or Friday, he was on another radio station, which will not be named.
Go on, say it.
On Hits FM. Go figure, right? So on one hand, they're doing gotcha calls
and then on the other hand, they're doing Fahmi, right?
Fahmi Fazel, of course, is the MP for Lembah Pantai.
Right, you know, so it is, I think it's going to be an interesting time for local media outlets to find this new equilibrium in this new Malaysia. What will be our identities moving forward? You know, let us know at BFM Radio 018-789-8899.
I think at the end of the day, it's still, again, it's the content game. It's all about content and all about balanced reporting and what comes out from that. And, you know, that's what people want.
And also, I think people also want to be entertained. So what if they can get a bit of gotcha, but they can also get a bit of politics and they get a whole range of things in one station?
Are you saying
than,
we should do gotcha calls?
Let's start doing prank calls to on the cabinet ministers then. Like, you know, I don't know.
And that, of course, has happened. I think several well-known politicians have been, you know, had those calls, and they will take calls from people claiming to be meet from the media. So, so that's one way of doing it. So we're from, well, we're not from, or we can't say we're from BFM.
Don't get any ideas there, Sherrod. I was being facetious there.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.